Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Society of New Haven. We've been here for a long time. We've gone through many changes, even upheavals and transformations. And at the present time, we're engaged as a congregation in a process of seeking a vision and trying to see a little bit into the future, where we might be headed and who we really are. So today we're going to think about that a little bit. Let's start. There is no needle without piercing point. There is no razor without trenchant blade. Death comes in many forms. With our feet we walk the goat's earth. With our hands we touch God's sky. Some future day in the heat of noon, I shall be carried shoulder high through the village of the dead. When I die, don't bury me under forest trees. I fear their thorns. When I die, don't bury me under forest trees. I fear their dripping water. Bury me under the great shade trees in the market. I want to hear the drums beating. I want to feel the dancers' feet. The theme is crying for a vision. I'm going to share an account of Lane Deer's vision quest. Which happened in the 20th century, but quite a long time ago. I was all alone on the hilltop. I sat there in the vision pit, a hole dug in the hill, my arms hugging my knees as I watched Old Man Chest, the medicine man who had brought me there, disappear far down in the valley. He was just a moving black dot among the pines, and soon he was gone altogether. Now I was all by myself, left on the hilltop for 4 days and nights without food or water until he came back for me. Indian children are never alone. They are always surrounded by grandparents, uncles, cousins, relatives of all kinds who fondle the kids, sing to them, tell them stories. But here I was, crouched in my vision pit, left alone by myself for the first time in my life. I was 16 then, still had my boy's name, and let me tell you, I was scared. I was shivering, and not only from the cold. The nearest human being was many miles away, and 4 days and nights is a long, long time. Of course, when it was all over, I would no longer be a boy, but a man. I would have had my vision. I would be given a man's name. Sioux men are not afraid to endure hunger, thirst, and loneliness, and I was only 96 hours away from being a man. The thought was comforting. Comforting, too, was the warmth of the star blanket, which Old Man Chest has wrapped around me to cover my nakedness. My grandmother had made it especially for this, my first vision-seeking. It was a beautifully designed quilt, white with a large morning star, made of many pieces of brightly colored cloth. That star was so big it covered most of the blanket. If Wakantaka, the Great Spirit, would give me the vision and the power, I would become a medicine man and perform many ceremonies wrapped in that quilt. I'm an old man now and many times a grandfather, but I still have that star blanket my grandmother made for me. I treasure it. Someday I shall be buried in it. The medicine man had also left a peace pipe with me, together with a bag of kinnikinnick, our kind of tobacco made of red willow bark. This pipe was even more of a friend to me than my star blanket. For us Indians, there is just the pipe, the earth we sit upon, and the open sky. The spirit is everywhere. Sometimes it shows itself through an animal, a bird, or some trees and hills. Sometimes it speaks from the badlands, a stone, or even from water. That smoke from the pipe, it goes straight up to the spirit world. But this is a two-way thing. Power flows down to us through that smoke, through the pipe stem. You feel that power as you hold your pipe. It moves from the pipe right into your body.
It makes your hair stand up. That pipe is not just a thing, it is a lie. Smoking this pipe would make me feel good and help me to get rid of my fears. Night was coming on. I was still lightheaded and dizzy from my first sweat bath, in which I had purified myself before going up the hill. The sweat bath had prepared me for my vision seeking. Even now, an hour later, my skin still tingled. But it seemed to have made my brains empty. Maybe that was good. Plenty of room for new insights. Darkness had fallen upon the hill. Blackness was wrapped around me like a velvet cloth. It seemed to cut me off from the outside world, even from my own body. It made me listen to the voices within me. I thought of my forefathers who crossed on this same hill before me. Sounds came to me through the darkness, the cries of the wind, the whisper of the trees, the voices of nature, animal sounds, the hooting of an owl. Suddenly, I felt an overwhelming presence. Down there with me in my cramped hole was a big bird. The pit was only as wide as myself, and I was a skinny boy, but that huge bird was flying around me as if he had the whole sky to himself. I could hear his cries, sometimes near and sometimes far, far away. I felt feathers or a wing touching my back and head. This feeling was so overwhelming that it was just too much for me. I trembled and my bones turned to ice. I grasped the rattle with the 40 pieces of my grandmother's flesh. His grandmother had taken a razor blade and cut 40 little squares out of her arm, and the blood was running down the arm, and put them in the rattle. The rattle also had many little stones in it, tiny fossils picked up from an ant heap. Ants collect them. Nobody knows why. These little stones are supposed to have a power in them. I shook the rattle and made a soothing sound like rain falling on rock. It was talking to me, but it did not calm my fears. I took the sacred pipe in my other hand and began to sing and pray, "Tunka Sheila, Grandfather Spirit, help me." But this did not help. I don't know what got into me, but I was no longer myself. I started to cry, and even my voice was different. I sounded like an older man. I couldn't even recognize this strange voice. I used long ago words in my prayer, words that no longer used nowadays. I tried to wipe away my tears, but they wouldn't stop. In the end, I just pulled that quilt over me, rolled myself up in it. Still, I felt the wings touching me. Slowly, I perceived that a voice was trying to tell me something. It was a bird cry, but I tell you, I began to understand some of it. I heard a human voice, too, strange and high-pitched, a voice which could not come from an ordinary living being. All at once, I was way up there with the birds. The hill with the vision pit was way above everything. I could look down even on the stars and the moon are close to my left side. It seemed as though the earth and the stars were moving below me. A voice said, "You are sacrificing yourself here to be a medicine man. In time, you will be one. You will teach other medicine men. We are the fowl people, the winged ones, the eagles and the owls. We are a nation and you shall be our brother. You will never kill or harm any one of us. You are going to understand us whenever you come to seek a vision here on this hill. You will learn about herbs and roots, and you will heal people. You will ask them for nothing in return. A man's life is short. Make yours a worthy one." I felt that these voices were good, and slowly my fear left me. I had lost all sense of time. I did not know whether it was day or night. I was asleep, yet wide awake. Then I saw a shape before me. It rose from darkness and the swirling fog which penetrated my earth hole. I saw that this was my great-grandfather, Paka Ushte, Lame Deer, old man chief of the Minneconju. I could see the blood dripping from my great-grandfather's chest where a white soldier had shot him. I understood that my great-grandfather wished me to take his name. This made me glad beyond words. Then I felt the power surge through me like a flood. I cannot describe it, but it filled all of me. Now I knew for sure that I would become a Wakasawakan, a medicine man. Again I wept, this time with happiness. Later, old man Chess told me that the vision pit had changed me in a way that I would not be able to understand at that time. He told me also that I was no longer a boy, that I was a man now. I was lame deer.
Now, in keeping with the request of the Proto Planning Committee, we will have a little time of meditation. I see Anne's not here. Oh, there she is.
Am I supposed to go?
Are you here with your timing device?
Yeah.
And this is to be a time of reflection and meditation on our future as a society. Terrence Blanchard, the trumpeter, was born and bred in New Orleans. During the Spike Lee documentary, which I didn't see, his mother is in it, and they film her as she goes into her house for the first time after being away, and she comes in and everything is in disarray and mildewed, and she's crying, and it's so he's right there in his own personal experience. And I think that Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath is symbolic of the times we're in, both the power of nature and apparently the impotence of government and society in some ways, and in a way we're all in the water, in my view. So as a UU, we are involved in a process of vision seeking, and just thinking about lame deer and the vision pit. We could think of ourselves as being all in the vision pit together here for a while, or in the cooking pot, cooking this transformation. And so I am offering something here that I'm throwing into the cooking pot, and it's my own sense of things, and I'm only offering it as that. It's not representative of anybody else, but I hope it might stimulate some thought and reflection. Crying for a vision. It doth not yet appear what we shall be. Can we become self-organizing as nature is? Instead of a flock of sheep directed from the outside by a shepherd or dog, a pack of wolves. Instead of a hierarchical state or corporation or army, a tribe. Instead of a king or president in whom power is focused, chiefs. Special chiefs for special purposes. The war chief. For each war, a different chief. The farm chief, the art chief, the science chief, the dancing chief, the musical chief, the cooking chief, the funeral chief. Each chief always subject to recall at any time. The chief is, as it were, extruded by the pack. Spontaneously, the tribe organizes itself by a kind of Brownian motion. Does anybody know what Brownian notion is? I'm not exactly sure what it is myself. It's like a random movement of molecules in a gas that somehow organize itself. The tribe, or the pack, moves freely over the smooth open space or the plateau. It resists being incorporated into any sort of state or empire. The earth, the universe as a whole, produces order from below by the spontaneous interactions of living particles. The species arise out of the processes of time, products not of the workshop with its plans and blueprints, but rather of the interactions of desiring particles, each going about its own business. What we might become is a community which lives along the lines of nature's flows. We could become an expression of self-organizing life.
We could relate to each other and to the world around us as a swarm of bees or a pack of wolves. No regimentation. An individual wolf might be now at the center of the pack, now at the periphery. She acts always for herself, always alone. Yet at the same time, her moves are always synchronized with the fluid movements of the pack. A great flock of birds wheels across the sky, and no one bird bumps into another one. A flock of starlings, or perhaps better, of crows. You ever see a really big flock of crows? It's quite a sight. A little ungainly, perhaps, a little clumsy at times, and yet still they are a flock. Still they move together toward wherever they must go. If there is a leader, we can't tell which one it is. We can embody by conscious intent in our life together the ecological order of the earth, the interconnectedness of all things. Each wolf is a co-creator of the pack. The health and well-being of the pack is the health and well-being of the individual wolf. The health and well-being of the individual wolf is the health and well-being of the pack. The intelligence, the vision, the cunning of the pack as a whole emerges spontaneously from the members living straight ahead, following the path of desire. Follow your bliss, said Joe Campbell. We might embody in our life as a congregation the same principles which are operative in the entire community of life in general. We could reject the idea of conquering nature. We could give up the notion that instinct, desire, is the enemy. Instead of being the dam, we could be the free-flowing river. A complex, many-dimensional life together. Each of us a complex, many-dimensional person. A gang of fools drunk on the energies of life. Participants in the wild, lively creativity which is inherent in this earth on which we dwell. True life is not elsewhere. True life is here. The spirit is poured out on the whole community. Each particle is charged with life and power. Every project is another throw of the dice in the great game. We have no wish to found an empire, nor to be an ideological support of imperial domination. We do not desire to organize our area into a territory unified from above by an orthodox creed to which all must consent. A creed like shop till you drop, for example. We don't want conformity, far from it. We revel in the diversity and strangeness of life, sometimes grotesque, but always beautiful. We seek allies in the great game. At stake is the future of our species on this earth. We learn how to live at peace with nature. We take dancing lessons, learning the cool moves of those who are well adapted to their place. Living on the earth, living well on the earth as full participants, finding satisfaction not in destroying the web of life, but in delicate and appropriate interactions with the other living beings around us. When the hive gets too large, the worker bees feed one of the larvae on special food so that it grows into a new queen. The new queen flies away, taking half of the hive with her, and establishes a new community elsewhere. There is no general headquarters of the bees of Turtle Island. There is no national government of the bees. Each hive is independent, yet they multiply, they prosper. Viral transmission. All we have to do is become fully alive, praising and affirming in all that we do the amazing wild life that moves through all things. As we find joy ourselves, as we are whirled up in the dance ourselves, participating in the intensity of the life of the pack in its locale, alive with the greater life, we will touch the lives of others. Viral transmission will occur. Contact will be made. When you fall in love, people notice something is different. Exuberance is beauty, said Blake. We will find our people. Some will turn away, afraid of so much life. But some will be infected. Some will say, I want to become a part of this, whatever it is. I want to belong to this self-organizing pack. where they're all following their bliss wherever it leads. The times require a new vision. As UUs, we have a tradition that positions us perhaps uniquely among religious communities to lead our society as a whole into a new, positive, life-affirming way. The present dominant belief system is on a collision course with realities that can no longer be pushed aside. Inventing liberties as we go, we have got to work out the complex fabric of a whole new nature-friendly culture. Need I add that it will be friendly to human nature at the deepest level, as well as to nature in general? William James said that the great eras of human history all had this in common, that people rediscovered a profound correspondence and appropriateness, a fit, between their own human being and the being of the world around them. Reality affords us that which we most deeply require. We can be at home in the universe. There is no separation. This is the vision the world of our time needs desperately. This is the way out of the trap which the world has become. We can become a part of a people to come, a people of the future, who will be comfortable in an ever-shifting complex world of multiple flows. Their faith will be in the processes of time and change, not in a supposedly stable, rock-like absolute outside of time. We have a message which can make sense out of this mad, mad world and restore it to sanity. Our self-interest as a congregation, our desire to be able to pay our bills and maintain our property, to be viable into the future, will be served best when we grab hold of this vision with both hands and become passionate about it.